Hare Krishna. Good morning, dear devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We will begin this morning Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 2, Chapter 4, Text 118. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yavata vachcha vaikalyam manasostu svabhavajam taloka mahimodrekat kshiyater kajitatamaha. Whenever my mind, by its own nature, would become disturbed, the vast splendors of the Vaikuntha world would dispel my agitation as the sun dispels darkness. Commentary. Gopakumara's mind remained restless because in Vaikuntha he was unable to find the object of his desire. Next text. Yada kadachin nijalabhyavastano naptiva hritsidati purva purvarvat tada tadiya paripurnata rujam nidanam agyaya narasyate svayam. Whenever it seemed that I had not achieved the object of my desire, and when my heart would therefore suffer, as it often had before, I would remember the root cause of my incompleteness, and that understanding itself would drive away the pain. Commentary. The satisfaction Gopakumara felt in Vaikuntha had been arranged to help him progress further to a world even more special and dear. There he would discover the final success of his worship of Sri Madangopal's lotus feet. Meanwhile, the powerful influence of Vaikuntha kept him from feeling much distress, even though he had not yet attained his goal. By his intelligence, he could discern that the cause of his suffering was his desire to reach a special place beyond even Vaikuntha, and this understanding was enough to pacify him for the time being. He knew that now that he had reached Vaikuntha, he would surely feel fully satisfied, if not at once, then after only a short while. I'm going to read a couple more verses. They're all connected. Itadrishat prapyatamam na kinchit vaikuntavasat kila vijitenyat sandeham ishat tvamapi hakartum nahasyatonya kim upichyatam tat. Have not the slightest doubt, I would tell my mind. There is no attainment more desirable than living here in Vaikuntha. So why even raise the question? Commentary. Gopakumara would address his own mind like this. No one should question the established conclusion of the Vedas that Vaikuntha is the highest destination of the soul. Tasmadari chanchala chitta buddhya dhyapi svabhavam chyajadurdatotra asmat param nasti param palam tat shantim param yukti shatena gachcha. O fickle heart, now use your intelligence, therefore, to cast this lower nature far away. It doesn't belong here. There is nothing greater than to reside in Vaikuntha, no greater goal. Consider the hundreds of arguments that support this truth and achieve the highest peace. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ganjana Shalakaya Chaksho Unmiritam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Ganim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Itinamane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Hari Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hari 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 Rama 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 Hari Hari. Last verses, we talked about the Lord's descent, which was very fleeting to Mathura, and why he had vacated temporarily Vaikuntha, and during that time, how some of the devotees present were very temporarily experiencing a disturbance because of his absence, including Gopakumar. And when Gopakumar attempted to inquire, no sooner than he began to ask the question, and the Lord was back. So that was given as another reason why Gopakumar was dissatisfied. And then here in these four verses, Gopakumar is explaining to the Mathura Brahmin internally how he was dealing with this dissatisfaction. He couldn't quite explain it, but nonetheless, by utilizing his intelligence beyond the mind, by utilizing his intelligence, he was being able, with spiritual intelligence, of course, we have to understand there is no question of material intelligence. It's all spiritual intelligence in Vaikuntha. But by utilizing his intelligence, he was able to convince himself that there is no cause to be lamenting. In the material world, we understand that mind, intelligence, and false ego are the characteristics of the subtle body, and they are material. But in the spiritual world, the intelligence, mind, and there's no false ego, they are on the spiritual platform, and therefore they do not in any way detract from one's blissful experiences of the spiritual world. And in fact, was I think the predominating deity of intelligence is Aniruddha, and is also a predominating deity in Vaikuntha. And that's also a part of spiritual intelligence. And Gopakumar is here using his intelligence to pacify himself. And therefore, the temporary dissatisfaction which he has been experiencing from time to time is also dispelled by his rationale that this is Vaikuntha. Why Vaikuntha is the topmost destination. All the evidence that I studied in Shastra previously points in that direction. And then he convinces himself with his intelligence that just be happy and don't pay any attention to this dissatisfaction, which he was able to overcome with his intelligence, at least at this particular point in time. When we spoke on these verses previously, we highlighted an important point that was brought out by these verses by a quote from Srila Prabhupada. For those of you who have not heard that quote, I wanted to read it today and speak a little bit about it. And it's about spiritual dissatisfaction. Srila Prabhupada was speaking about it in a conversation and with Shyama Sundar. And if we properly understand what spiritual satisfaction is, then we can, with our intelligence also, hopefully spiritual intelligence, we can properly channel that spiritual, that or that dissatisfaction in a positive way for helping us to make progress in devotional service. People in general, and Prabhupada speaks about this, they cannot know, he speaks about it elsewhere, not in the quote I'm about to make. He speaks about it, I believe, in the Nectar of Devotion. He speaks about how people who are still attached to the material world, people who are attracted to the impersonal conception, impersonalists, and Mayavadis, those who are addicted to jnana and mental speculation, when they hear about this dissatisfaction and how it's spiritual, they can't understand it. However, and Prabhupada uses as an example in the Nectar of Devotion, he speaks about specifically in relationship to the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and he explains an important point that everywhere we read in the Ramayana about so many different types of situations that provoke distress, that provoke anxiety, that provoke so many different moods of fear, anxiety, and somebody may read that and they may wonder, why is it that people are so much interested in hearing these descriptions? And he gives it an example that even Hanuman, the completely liberated devotee situated in a platform of devotional service, of servitorship, and ecstatic love for the Lord, he relishes continuously hearing these descriptions about Sita being held in captivity, Ram's distress about Sita being kidnapped, and Dasarath, his feelings of pain at what happened by the, you know, his son Ramachandra being sent to exile to the forest. Bharat, his distress that he wanted his brother to be seated on the we see so many and hear about so many distressful experiences. And that somebody who has no understanding about the spiritual platform and how these are spiritual moods which are internally relished both by the devotees who hear them and by the devotees who experience them, they cannot enter, they cannot dip into and possibly understand these spiritual emotions. And Prabhupada, in this, it's a Nectar of Devotion, he says, therefore, one has to be very careful to not speak about such topics to people who are too addicted to mental speculation, people who are too addicted to an impersonal conception, people who are too addicted to sense gratification, because they will simply not be able to understand these transcendental topics. So, Prabhupada in many places, including in this conversation I wanted to read today, he brings out this point that this kind of shoka means lamentation. Shoka is one of the ecstatic symptoms of love of Godhead. There are primary symptoms, there are primary rasas, and there are sthayi bhava, and the secondary, and one of them is lamentation. Another of them is anger. Another is ghastliness. It's like the example we gave before about Bhishma's devotional service, ecstatic devotional service, was firing arrows into the body of Lord Krishna. And how can anybody comprehend that this is a stimulus for ecstatic love if they don't accept that the experiences which are perverted to be reflected in this material world ultimately have their place in the spiritual world? And in that place in the spiritual world, they are eternal and their stimulus is for the highest ecstasy, ecstatic love, including dissatisfaction. Example I think we gave when we talked about this topic previously, it's a very vivid example from Chaitanya Charitamrita when Ramachandra Puri said to Madhavendra Puri, "Why are you lamenting?" When he was quoting the verse, you know, in the mood of separation, of moods similar to Srimati Radharani, feeling great distress of bewilderment, dissatisfaction, that Krishna has gone to Mathura, and what shall I do now? And when Madhavendra Puri was experiencing this ecstasy, Ramachandra Puri, also somebody who was incapable because he was addicted to impersonalistic conception, he was addicted to fault finding, he was addicted in so many respects to qualities or characteristics which were not conducive for bhakti, he said to his own spiritual master, "Why are you lamenting? Don't you know if somebody's experiencing Brahmabhuta, the highest ecstasy, he shouldn't be lamenting. But yet, and you are lamenting. You shouldn't lament in this way. And this is the perfect example of how an offense is created from somebody who's incapable of understanding the characteristics, symptoms, and moods and behavior of devotees who are experiencing either dissatisfaction or lamentation or any of the other symptoms which are stimuluses for ecstatic love. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada's conversation is not going to speak about dissatisfaction as from a person who's on the platform of ecstatic love. What we're going to read is the characteristics of dissatisfaction, which is a stimulus for a devotee to progress in his devotional service. And therefore, the reason why I'm bringing that out is because here, we're specifically in these four verses, we're hearing about the occasional arising in Gopa Kumara's heart of dissatisfaction, which any person looking externally, without being able to comprehend what is spiritual dissatisfaction, they would conclude, how is this possible? I hear about this place, Vaikuntha, that everybody should be going to, and Vaishnavas aspire for. But yet, look, here we have somebody in Vaikuntha who's dissatisfied. And if I'm going to be dissatisfied there, why bother undergoing, why bother even hearing about it? Why bother hearing about it? Why bother undergoing restricting myself from sense gratification if that's what I'm going to get is dissatisfaction? Why bother even placing my faith? As we oftentimes say, that pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that the devotee still faithfully and respectfully accepts that it exists. But somebody who doesn't understand the characteristics of pure devotional service, he may think, why should I go any further placing my faith if the end result is dissatisfaction? So therefore, in order to overcome that obstacle, it's necessary, very necessary, to understand that there is spiritual dissatisfaction. There's spiritual anger. There's spiritual, even spiritual lust. Of course, we're not going to talk about that today, because that lust is pure love of Godhead, which the gopis themselves experience in Goloka, Vrindavan, and which has no comparison whatsoever to the lust of the material world. As Kaviraj Goswami says, it's like comparing iron and gold. And you cannot, but yet, still, we should understand by that example that emotions are inherent in the jiva. And to destroy emotions is not the prerequisite for coming to the spiritual platform. Sometimes people see that these emotions are the cause of so much distress, and therefore they want to simply renounce everything and become, the tendency towards impersonalism is to become null and void. I have so many problems by my emotions. I'm just an emotional, I don't know how to explain it, But we hear devotees say this oftentimes. I'm so much controlled by my emotions. And therefore the natural tendency is to think, better no emotions. But if we have the opportunity to hear about the characteristics, behavior, and moods of devotees whose spiritual emotions are satisfying, then it will at least give us a sense of understanding that emotions are not meant to be eradicated. They're meant to be properly dovetailed. And the only way they can be properly dovetailed is by seeing these emotions as an impetus to remember Krishna, as an impetus to speak about Krishna, as an impetus to hear about Krishna. Because the more we hear about Krishna, and especially the more we hear about Krishna's pastimes and his dealings with his devotees, we get exposed to many different emotions that exist between the different lovers of Krishna and the different ecstasies they experience, whether in the primary rasas or secondary rasas. And that's why Srila Rupa Goswami has so gone through laboriously trying to describe these emotions and their connection with Krishna in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This introduction is just simply an introduction to Prabhupada's conversation about dissatisfaction. And sometimes, I'll add one other point which I feel I should make. Sometimes I've observed devotees try to obsessively speak about their dissatisfaction as if it's to others, as if it's spiritual. And one has to be very, very careful to not become obsessed to speaking about one's own dissatisfaction, disclosing it to others, thinking that others will think that I'm spiritual because I'm always dissatisfied and expressing dissatisfaction. This is again another perverted reflection. I'm just speaking about dissatisfaction internally and how internally the devotee should deal with it, not how externally a devotee displays it, discloses it to others, and then hopes that others will see it as spiritual. This is not the purpose behind this discussion. But I've observed it sometimes, that devotees do that, and this is not why I'm bringing this topic up, to get absorbed in these things. It's a way to internally. Spiritual life also means internal, external. And a lot of the topics that we discuss are internal topics. We need to discuss them. And we need to try to discuss them with others to be able to understand them better, certainly, and to be able to apply them internally so that we can actually engage in sadhana, which is actually an objective, or the objective of a sadhaka. Sadhaka means internal work. So we bring these points up for internal work. And we should not be afraid to do it. But at the same time, we should be able to try to understand it with our intelligence. Like Gopakumar. His spiritual intelligence, of course, is never defective. Our intelligence may lead us astray if we're not careful. And as we said, sometimes people who are too intelligent, Sometimes if they're too intelligent, Prabhupada even said that in one lecture, I remember I oftentimes quote it. Prabhupada was very upset because, and he's, it was a class, I believe, in Vrindavan. He was complaining to the devotees that don't be over-intelligent. Don't think that you know more than your spiritual master. And he was specifically speaking about how some of his devotees who were working on his publications were putting words that Prabhupada didn't use. And they were putting other words there, and he was speaking over intelligence. And similarly, we should be careful, as we spoke about Gopakumara, also because of his simplicity and his naivety, he was not disturbed in any way, nor was he fault-finding in any way. When he saw apparent discrepancies, he's very, very simple and humble, and that was his quality which enabled him to overcome what somebody who is over-intelligent could potentially overcome in being able to understand the nature of the spiritual world, the nature of spiritual intelligence, the nature of spiritual discrimination. We should be careful to utilize our intelligence properly to discriminate and try to do the internal work that needs to be done by understanding how dissatisfaction can be. Dissatisfaction can be a way to help ourselves become more conscious of the obstacles I need to overcome in devotional service. And that's exactly what's happening. Gopakumara, he had no obstacles. His only obstacle was he wasn't where he wanted to be. He was in Vaikuntha, but still, as we read today, that Gopakumara felt in Vaikuntha, the dissatisfaction Gopakumara felt in Vaikuntha had been arranged to help him progress further to a world even more special and dear. Arranged. Well, if it was arranged, and he didn't arrange it, it means somebody else arranged it. That's another benefit at looking how my dissatisfaction possibly was arranged by Krishna to help me overcome the obstacles I need to overcome to become more steady in devotional service. So dissatisfaction was arranged to help him progress further. Okay, let me read now Prabhupada speaking about dissatisfaction. And Prabhupada speaking, dissatisfaction is a good thing if it is for better advancement that is wanted. Dissatisfaction. Just like the karmis, they are also dissatisfied with $100,000. That means they want to make 1,000,000,000 dollars. So that kind of dissatisfaction for the karmi is good because he can increase further assets. Prabhupada, of course, is saying is good in respect to the karmis. And he's using that as an example. Similarly, if I am dissatisfied spiritually, or I am not making advance, I am still on the material platform. That is good. That dissatisfaction is, then he says, Socrates also. Yes. An ass, cats, dogs, they are satisfied with a morsel of grass. That's all. You see? A little stool. What is the value of that satisfaction? What is the value of that? That is our philosophy. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dissatisfied. What is that? Karatava namagrahane bhavishyati. Yugayatam nimesena chakshusha pravashayatam. Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahe name. Nayanam galadashudaraya chakshusha pravashayatam. What is that verse? Nayanam galadashudaraya pulakar nichitam papu gadgadagira karatavanama gahane bhavishyati. There is dissatisfaction that when my heart will be throbbing, when my heart will be throbbing, when torrents of rain will come out from my eyes, when my speech will be faltering, when that day will come. That means this ordinary way, he's not satisfied. That is the ecstatic summit. One becomes like a madman chanting Hare Krishna. So he is expecting when that stage will come. This stage comes when one is in the summit of chanting. This stage, asata sakti vidha, eight kinds of transformation. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is putting forward that when that stage will come, dissatisfaction. This is dissatisfaction. He says, I have not a pinch of devotion to Krishna. Even after crying, even coming to that stage of crying, he says, no, it is not the stage. I'm crying just to make a show that I am a great devotee. I do not love Krishna. The evidence is that I'm still living. Probably saying, first, I'm crying, but I'm just to make a show. He says, no, it's even more than that. There's more evidence. I'm still living. And therefore, that is another example. He says, the evidence is that I'm still living without Krishna, and still I'm living. That is my imperfection. If I would have been really lover of Krishna, without Krishna, I would have long, long ago died. But that I have not done. I'm still living. So who can show dissatisfaction like this? He says that I am still living. This is the evidence that I do not love Krishna. Even coming to the crying stage. First of all, he said, when I shall cry incessantly for want of Krishna. And again, coming to that stage, he is still dissatisfied. He says, I am simply crying just to make a show. I do not love Krishna. If there was a pinch of love for Krishna, then I would have died long, long ago without Krishna. This is dissatisfaction. Who can show such kind of dissatisfaction? And who can feel such dissatisfaction? So the best utility is this Krishna consciousness from any philosophical point of view. So, I already introduced that which I just read. I'm not going to speak that much more on it, but I just use it as evidence in the words of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is also speaking specifically how dissatisfaction, when properly understood and channeled properly, can become an impetus for spiritual thoughts and an impetus for remembering Krishna and an impetus for becoming more steady in our Krishna consciousness. And if dissatisfaction is not properly understood, one may mistake or equate improperly material dissatisfaction as spiritual dissatisfaction. It can never be. Material dissatisfaction is just as Prabhupada gave the example of the wealthy person who is dissatisfied because he has $100,000s. Why is he dissatisfied? Because he wants thousands of millions of dollars. And he thinks that thousands of millions of dollars will make me satisfied. So that is material dissatisfaction. And that material dissatisfaction only motivates one into more material fruitive activities and material adjustments. Let me try to adjust this material dissatisfaction, as Prabhupada gives the example, by being burdened by a heavy weight on one shoulder. Let me adjust the material dissatisfaction I'm experiencing from the heavy weight of this one shoulder by putting it on my other shoulder. And then I've been able to adjust my material dissatisfaction in this way. But this does not put an end to material dissatisfaction. Adjusting a fruitive activity by another fruitive activity. Being dissatisfied and then trying to overcome our dissatisfaction by another fruitive activity only creates more of that dissatisfaction, and it will never become spiritual until one understands that he has to connect to Krishna. Never will that dissatisfaction produce anything beneficial for him until he realizes, I need to turn to Krishna. You know, when that point comes, it could be thousands, millions of births. As we've already talked about, how the super soul is like the bird sitting on the tree, watching the other bird enjoying the fruits of the tree. As long as he enjoys the fruits of the tree, those fruits don't come simply in enjoyment. Those fruits also come in the form of suffering. So he's watching the enjoyment and the suffering of the bird who's enjoying both fruits. And he's waiting patiently for the bird enjoying those fruits to turn his attention to him. By the mercy of a Vaishnava, we may get the opportunity to turn our attention. But having once turned our attention, then we should always try to make progress by keeping our attention focused on him in a way that helps us to overcome the tendency or the temptation to always relieve our distress by another fruitive activity. And therefore, so many verses in the Bhagavatam have elaborated on this point. We oftentimes quote Prahlad Maharaj, in the material world, every materialist is endeavoring for happiness, and he's trying to mitigate his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, one cannot be happy as long as he endeavors for happiness. Because as soon as he engages in his endeavors for happiness, he is creating all his conditions for future distress. There's no end to the cycle. No end. Birth after birth after birth. Dissatisfaction is simply the perverted reflection of the spiritual dissatisfaction, which has its origin in the spiritual world. And the more the devotee begins to understand how spiritual satisfaction can help him or her to make progress in spiritual life when properly understood, then Srila Prabhupada is speaking about this with his perfect, concise description by using Lord Chaitanya's mood as an example of dissatisfaction, which is the highest mood, and which is, of course, the mood which the devotees in the Goloka Vrindavan continuously experience, but as we have many times alluded to and tried to explain, to fully comprehend, and Prabhupada also makes this point in the Nectar Devotion, even to fully comprehend or try to comprehend it is very difficult to fully understand. And even Gopal Kumar told the mature Brahman the same thing. I'm only giving you a little indication of it. Yes, I'm trying to help you understand. You can hear about it. But to fully understand, you have to experience it yourself. So this is simply an opportunity to give us a glimpse. All of this that we're reading about now is an opportunity to give us a glimpse of how this dissatisfaction in Gopa Kumara is the impetus in him and can become an impetus in us as well. For those who understand there is a higher spiritual goal which we are endeavoring to achieve in this life, which is not simply to relieve our distress. This higher spiritual goal is to give pleasure to Krishna. This is the higher spiritual goal, and we'll be challenged, tested again, again, and again as we make progress in devotional service. Why? Because Krishna, who is seated within the heart, will arrange this for his devotee. He says, I have compassion for them. I will destroy within their hearts the obstacles that's obstructing them from coming to me, from approaching to me. If they always endeavor and keep their intelligence fixed on me as the goal, I will remove the obstacles on their path. Krishna is arranging it, not just for Gopa Kumara and Vaikuntha, but the Lord is arranging it also for everyone in this world who takes shelter of his instructions, and especially who takes shelter of hearing and glorifying and repeating these transcendental narrations, which are meant to destroy all the impediments within the heart from the root. That's what they're meant to do. Maintain faith. And these four verses spoken by Gopal Kumar to the Mathura Brahman, they illustrate this point of how Gopal Kumar is using his purified intelligence to convince himself that this is the best place to be. And because it's the best place to be, in due course of time, I'm sure everything will be revealed to me, even though I'm feeling some incompleteness and dissatisfaction. He also had that faith. It's the best place for me to be. Similarly, we're in the best place we can be if we take shelter in hearing the topics of the Lord. It's the safest place to be. Prabhupada described it as Kirtan Ras is the safest place to be in the spiritual world. There's no safer place. Even if bombs are falling, even if there's so many other calamities going on in this world, there's no stopgap remedial measure which is going to put an end to all of these disturbances and causes of dissatisfaction. The safest place to be, safest place, is to be hearing, chanting, and remembering instructions, pastimes, and of Krishna in relationship with his pure unalloyed devotees. Gopal Kumara realized, yes, here I am in Vaikuntha. It will be revealed in due course of time. And then he becomes happy, ecstatic, for the time being. Also for us, same way, except the only difference Gopa Kumar is in Vaikuntha. To the degree that we're absorbed in this material world, we are in the material world. To the degree that we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, we are not in the material world. That's our choice. That choice is always there. And that is the freedom of choice that Krishna has given to each and every one of us, to make that choice. And when we make the right choices, then he becomes pleased. Then he becomes pleased. He becomes happy. And what does he do when we make the right choices? He helps us from within and removes those obstacles which are the cause of our dissatisfaction. Perfect philosophy, perfect Krishna. All we have to aspire for is perfect practice. Until we're on the perfect platform, we have to aspire to perfect practice. And unless we practice, we'll never come to the perfect platform. So that is the end of our talk today. And today's Wednesday. We'll chant some japa together. And next class, we will begin on text 122. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. For those of you who still have rounds to chant and would like to continue, I think the Zoom session can continue if you like. I'm not the host anymore, so the host could keep it going for others to chat together if you like, but I need to get up. So we'll end here. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.